It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And hey, looky here, a brand new broadcast week begins now on the horn. Headon.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to pick out a screen name and a password and jump into the madcap, wainy, zany, wacky, real-time extravaganza. You don't even have to use your real name. You can pick out an anonymous name and jump in, or something like an anonymous.
Anonymous.
Mm-hmm. To jump into the Zachy, Wayne-y, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza is the Horn chat room. Longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky is there waiting for you. Although he is a spacing guild master, he has declined to fold space this afternoon. And, of course, you'll also be greeted by Anatole and VT Blom. And, hey, I'm in there, too. More folks will wander along as the program progresses. It is the 10th day of September, 2018. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Moran Monday on the horn, and, lo, in my father's house are many Morans. We are running hot and true on both streams, both at whiterosesociety.org. That's the stream that feeds TuneIn, and the stream that feeds it comes from headon.live. One or the other will get you where you want to be. And there's Otto popping in. Howdy, Otto. Welcome to the wacky, zany, madcap, merry, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. it's a fun little augmentation to the events that transpire on the program during our live hours. Let's see. Let's turn that down and turn off the little noise and. You got to do that every time you reset. Oh well. I hope you had a good weekend. I'm not going to complain, but it did nothing but rain all weekend long, and that's pretty much what it's going to do all week. It was rainy all day Saturday. It poured all day Sunday, and it rained last night. And you know, there's something about getting woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning by the uninterruptible power supplies going off that makes it a little hard to get back to sleep later. And that's 2 hours that I got to sit around waiting for my filthy little habit that I engage in weekday mornings. So if I'm a little bit I'll just ask your kind forbearance. It looks like Hurricane Florence may be the East Coast's answer to last year's Harvey, and so folks are getting ready in South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, No idea where it's exactly where it's going to strike, but they're assuming it will. States of emergency have been declared in Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. By sometime Thursday, I guess the some portion of the rains will be hitting southern West Virginia. We don't need that. Remember, there's something on the order of 100 toxic waste dams that are just made out of dirt and mud, holding back billions of gallons of toxic waste. And every time I see heavy rains headed for West Virginia, I worry, because these were, of course, built by coal companies who don't give a tinker's damn about human life. They care about profits, right? So that's the reason for my misgiving. But of course, they're gearing up for the hurricane in the White House too. They're stocking up on white paper towels for Julius Geezer to go and throw at the people who have to live through the hurricane, or hopefully live through the hurricane, because he cares so very, very much. Right. The usual warnings apply when the rains are coming. The program, thanks to Appalachian Power, may disappear if the power blinks, but I'll bring it right back as soon as the power comes back up. Because, well, you know, antiquated, rickety, so 100 years ago, coal-fried power generation. You understand. We have thanks to send out this evening. You know, we finished a week about 90 bucks and 95 bucks in the hole, and I wanted to thank Beth. Our buddy Beth in Dallas, for taking that down to 70 bucks in the hole. And thank you, Mitchell. Thank you, Mitchell, very kindly, for taking a bite out of it as well. We have, so that means the fundraising goal for this evening is 269 bucks. Just to stay up to speed with what we try to, you know, well, with the paying of the bills. And, of course, the salary for Agnes is masseur, and you know it's September, so we've laid off the pool maintenance technician, but we still have to take care of the Gulfstream 5 and the Maybach, and we do it all on $200 a night. Yeah, no kidding. Thanks, but seriously, all kidding aside, thanks going out to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Nancy in Virginia. Thank you very much indeed to Dwayne in PA. Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you very kindly to Marsha in Oregon. Thank you, Marsha. And thanks very kindly. Just a minute. I missed one there. Thank you very kindly to Tom in PA. Thanks as well to our buddy Ron. Thank you, Ron, in far Canada. Thanks go out to Kathleen in Minnesota. Thank you, Kathleen, so very much. And thank you to Khalil in Fort Worth. Thank you, Khalil. Thanks also going out to our buddy Don and to Judy in New York and to Daniel. Thank you, Daniel. So that's those are our subscribers over the course of the weekend. If you'd like to be a subscriber, jump right in and head over to headon.live and use either the PayPal or the Patreon access points. One of these days we might have $410 a month subscribers, and then there's no more talking about all this. As it is, though, we need to raise $269 this evening. That's $26.90 times 10 people. And the rest of the ciphering and whatnot I'll leave to y'all, but $269, and that's, you know, we'll be working toward paying mid-month mid-month bills here at the Horn. I've been working, or not working, but perturbed by something. I don't know. Exactly what's going on, but there seems to be some weirdness happening with the Horn's Facebook page. I haven't sorted that out, and I don't know when I will. I mean, I'm seeing postings going back to Saturday, but nothing after that, which is kind of weird. So if I find something out, I'll let you know. Thank you very kindly to Steve from Georgistan, who says, I'm here. Sounds good on the Xbox TuneIn app. Steve from Georgistan, all around great guy, says he'll be joining the chat in about an hour or so. So that takes care of most of the housekeeping to get the week started, and it only took 11 minutes. Had a good note from Ron in Raleigh. Subject line: every damn day. It's Monday, and once again I'm so angry I could eat dirt and run the rabbits in my yard. Not working at the moment, so I spend a lot of time listening, watching, and reading the news. Today, John Pornstash Bolton threatened to bring sanctions against the International Criminal Court if they have the temerity to investigate war crimes of American soldiers in Afghanistan, claiming the maggots claim they're protecting the constitutional rights of American citizens. The GI that was convicted of the massacre in Iraq was given a get-out-of-jail-free card last week. Meanwhile, the PLO mission in D.C. is being shut down because they're refusing to kiss the pumpkin potentate's ass. Trump and the other bully Netanyahu have reached some sort of agreement on a peace accord, which I'm sure is a really good deal for the Palestinians. Funds have already been cut off now that the mission is being closed. Nothing like negotiating with a gun to your head. Somehow that's not exactly negotiating, is it? That's more like, extortion? There's a big fancy legal word for it out there somewhere. Bolton had the nerve to call Israel a liberal democracy and our greatest ally. You mean he didn't call him our partner in peace? I won't even start on our actions in Yemen. My great fear is that we're only 2 years into this dumpster fire. Will the country become inured to shit like this? Well, if past is prologue and history is any indication, the answer to that is yes. We will become inured to it. You know, as long as, As long as the cable stays on, and as long as there are things with which we may amuse ourselves to death, yes, we will become inured to it. We certainly became inured to the filthy little war that Reagan and his criminal cabal ran in Central America, along with the side deals with various and sundry sleazy operatives that became known as Iran-Contra. Frankly, the country wasn't all that interested in taking out Richard Nixon either, but kind of had that forced on them. The American people will put up with a lot as long as it doesn't actually touch them. So that's the short answer to that question, Ron. So I guess it's kind of a wait and see sort of thing. The speculation continues as to who the anonymous op-ed writer is. And this morning, since I did engage in my filthy little habit and tuned in that Republican on MSNBC, he says that they've got the name of the person who wrote the op-ed. and says that it's making its way slowly but surely around D.C. But they're not going to release it just yet. What do you think of that? Now, the op-ed was written and delivered to the New York Times. What obligation does MSNBC have to maintain the New York Times? Well, you get the idea. Of course, even if the person is revealed, no good will come of it, because the for-profit media will promptly get everything about it completely wrong. And there will be lots of interviews. Lots and lots of interviews. And there will be discussions of whether or not it was a coup inside the White House. But the ultimate conversation, the fact that we have a president who is unfit for office, and who, if in fact anyone associated with his regime took the Constitution seriously, would be removed by operation of the 25th Amendment. Don't count on that. Don't count on that at all. Maybe I'm wrong. But I don't think I am. I really, really don't think I am. But all of that having been said, you know, a reminder. The first day of the week is special here. Every day of the week is special here. But the first day of the week is special here because we celebrate morons. Because they pile up like cordwood over the course of a Friday evening, a Saturday, and a Sunday. But by the time we, you know, by the time we get to Monday, we've got enough to make a show out of them.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right this way. Just a few steps off the Carnival Midway. We're right here. The thin cybernetic veil of canvas that is the Moran Monday tent on the horn. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. And we've got them all for you, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins, friends and neighbors, moms and dads. We've got them all for you. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpansies, maggots, libertarians, republicans, all gathered together in this one single tent where you will be shocked, you will be stunned, you will be amazed, you will occasionally laugh, and you will be dumbstruck by the amount of moranity that exists in our country today. Yes, 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 for less than 50 cents for every three-hour program for a $10 a month subscriber, it's all right here. Every last bit of right-wing moranity you could ever hope to hear or even contemplate. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. No, indeed, you can't. So instead of throwing your money away over there on the Carnival Midway, throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls in the desperate and misunderstood hope to take home a baby iguana, just come on over here. Pony up right here, right here at the entrance to the Moran Monday tent, and wander on in. A gentle warning as the notes of the Calliope pervade the fairgrounds here. Keep a close hand on beach bags, purses, watches, wallets, loose change, children, pets. Even that iguana that you won while throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls. And men, hang on to your European-style messenger bags, because, after all, being Republicans, the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. You will. And, of course, there's no Moran like an old Moran. So why don't we start with America's number one pedophile, Moran. That's right, I'm talking about Roy Tolamore of Talibama. Yes. You may remember a few months back, Roy Tolamore was out there running the hustle, trying to raise money so he could pursue justice against them harlot slut women what done said I was a pedophile and kept me from fulfilling God's will to be a senator from the great state of Talibama. Now, the suits were filed. Roy Tolamore and his wife, Kaler, filed a lawsuit in July against several groups and individuals saying that they had defamed him with their political ads. Now, of course, given that the way that the law works in this country where things like defamation are concerned, Roy Tolamore, being a public figure, really didn't have a leg to stand on. You know, in the modern era, the standard of the standard by which such cases are gauged is known as Falwell v. Hustler, and that was a case in which nasty old Jerry Falwell, who, if there is a hell, is burning in it even as we speak, sued Larry Flint and Hustler magazine over an ad in which Larry Flint got deeply under Falwell's skin by suggesting that he, Falwell, had a sexual relationship with his nasty old mother. The Supreme Court told Jerry Falwell to fuck right the fuckity fuck off and go away, because he, Jerry Falwell, was a public figure, and, you know, you gotta kind of be tough if you're going to be one of those. And so, coming into the future, through the future, into the present. See how that works? Roy Tolamore, back in July, filed a lawsuit, presumably used one of his Jew lawyers. Remember when he was talking about his Jew lawyer? They say it like that, Jew. Mm-hmm. They filed a lawsuit in July and fundraised all over it. And then, lo and behold, last Friday, Moore's lawyer went into court and moved to dismiss the lawsuit. Didn't offer any grounds for it or anything like that. Just moved to dismiss it. Now, a cynic would say that's because the only purpose of this all along was to make money for Roy and Kayla. Mm-hmm. Someone with perhaps a little bit more of a legal bent might say that a lawyer finally helped Roy, who was, even though he's a lawyer, not by any stretch of the imagination, the sharpest scrivener in the shop. Finally explained to Roy Tolamore that he really didn't want to be engaging in a whole lot of discovery with these people he was suing. Among other things, an allegation in the lawsuit claimed that Roy Tolamore was banned from the Gadsden Mall in the 1970s because of the fact that he was, among other things, creeping around on Santa's little helper. In his lawsuit papers, it said, "These ads included false content and was published with a reckless disregard as to their falsity." The case was dismissed without prejudice. That means he can refile it if he runs low on money. I mean, if he develops different evidence. Mm-hmm. Plus, he's also got a new hustle, Roy Tola does. not sure if you caught this last week, but Roy Tolamore is suing Sacha Baron Cohen for an obvious comedic skit in which Sacha Baron Cohen, playing a character, ran a pedophile detector over Roy Moore, and the damn thing went off. Roy Tolamore is claiming that he's been defamed, and he's had emotional stress. And his wife, Kaler's, had emotional stress, too, because he was tricked into showing up on Who Is Murka. And that his use of a disguise and false pretenses, that being an award ceremony from Israel, suckered him in, and that that he had no way of knowing he was going to be defamed. And again, in the lawsuit, his lawyers claim that Roy Tolamore has been the subject of widespread ridicule and humiliation. I don't think Sacha Baron Cohen caused that. I think Roy Tolamore, by virtue of the fact that he's a religious fundamentalist on a par with anything that any fundamentalist group has to offer, sort of brought that on himself. You know, running around and hooting and hollering about the gays and how his marriage with the lovely Ms. Kaler is going to be ruined because of the fact that a couple of guys picked out a China pattern somewhere in California. Nah, he brought that on himself. But now he can send out fundraising letters saying, "Dear friend, Jesus wanted me to send you this letter. It takes money to run lawsuits, friend. And Jesus wants me to have enough money to sue that Sacha Baron Cohen for making a mockery out of our faith and our religious liberty." Now, I don't have that email in front of me, but, well, would you be surprised if you found out that one of those had gone out? So you got Roy Tola there among our morons this evening, but over the course of the weekend, we got to talk about this. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, feels the hot breath of Beto O'Rourke upon his waxy, sweaty neck as Beto catches up with him and may even surpass him. He's beaten him fundraising-wise 2-1 at least. One Republican campaign type said that the GOP is having to divert monies away from toss-up battleground elections to try to prop up Rafaelito, which kind of surprises me that they would do that, because nobody likes him. I mean, I don't think his own, well, maybe his wife likes him. Cruz was complaining, though. He was campaigning in at an event in Katy, K-A-T-Y, Texas. And he said, "We're seeing tens of millions of dollars flooding into the state of Texas from liberals all over the country who desperately want to turn the state of Texas blue. They want us to be just like California, right down to tofu and silicon and dyed hair." Now, this is not an attack on Mrs. Cruz, but she is not a natural blonde. that hair on her head would be dyed. No real idea of what the real color is. She may not even know after all these years. And even her hairdresser doesn't know for sure. But it ain't blonde. And he went on and trashed her a little bit. He said his wife Heidi was a California vegetarian. She's wonderful, but I brought her to the great state of Texas. After I came here, you know, from Canada. They want us to be just like California, right down to tofu and silicon and dyed hair. Can I, I just want to tell you, that word, silicon, it means something to me because, well, it basically, silicon metal made it possible for us to have food on our family when we were growing up, if we recall the great words of Dim Leader, put food on our families. My dad worked on a silicon furnace, and I went to the furnace two or three times back when you could take a 10-year-old kid to a furnace with you. It was huge, noisy, hot. And silicon is the, unless I've forgotten my larnin, silicon is the most abundant metal on the, face of the earth. It's not good for much all by itself. It's brittle, and it has a pretty broad crystalline structure. But it's one of those things, if you alloy it to something else, it makes the something else a lot better. In particular, they like to alloy it with aluminum. It makes aluminum able to withstand heat and pressure, and so that you can use it in things like engine blocks and heads and so forth. But that's silicon. You get silicon by cooking quartzite. And quartzite is nothing but silicon dioxide, SiO2. And if you get a piece of quartzite rock hot enough, the oxygen will burn away and leave you with nothing but the silicon metal. Of course, insofar as this program goes out via the internet, everyone who's listening to this program is using some silicon. Because silicon is what is used in the chips, the CPUs of our various and sundry processors. Doesn't take near as much, and it's got to be really, really pure, but doesn't take near as much for that as it does, say, for an engine block. I think, though, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, was referring to silicone, which is not very often used anymore in breast implants. Because that's where, and notice, tofu, silicon, and dyed hair. That's where Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America's mind goes when he thinks about California. Blonde women with big boobs eating tofu. Which is not a great place for the mind of somebody who is supposedly America's very best Christian to be going. He did say that his wife Heidi is wonderful, but that he had brought her to the... We went through that. Mick Mulvaney, the weirdo Office of Management and Budget Director in the Trump regime, went so far as to say that there's a very real possibility Republicans could lose Cruz's seat in the Senate. He said, I don't think it's likely, but it's a possibility. How likable is a candidate? That still counts. Sort of noting that, well, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, isn't very likable. Okay, who are we kidding? He's not likable at all. His vile old gospel sharp daddy probably doesn't even think much of him, except for the part where they were pouring oil on his head and anointing him to be the future king of America. That's real. That video exists out there. And now he's desperately sniffing around after Trump to come down there and hold a really big rally in the biggest stadium in Texas. It's going to be huge. And won't anybody allowed there be allowed to be a mominish? No. And that plaid shirt guy won't be there either. We sicked the Secret Service on him. But Rafaelito doesn't think much of his constituents, because he thinks that they'll sit there and watch him let his wife and family and father get slimed by Donald Trump and then not notice when he goes sniffing after him and trying to get his nose up Trump's fundament to help him save his Senate seat. Of all the things that could happen in the Senate elections, and there's a lot of them in this cycle, nothing would be a bigger blow to the Republican Party than to lose a Senate seat in Texas. Losing a Senate seat in Tennessee would be a close second. But the fact of the matter is, Phil Bredesen is running against, it's Moran Monday. He's running against a Moran.
Goodness.
And so he's got a viable shot just because that's all the Republicans in Tennessee could come up with. A woman with close ties to a guy who is up to his eyeballs in Russians. Yeah, we're talking about Marsha Blackburn.
Goodness.
Kyrsten Sinema taking, and she did. I know she had competition, but yeah, she won the primary in Arizona, and she's too far to the right. Too far to the right for some folks. But she got that D after her name, and that means being part of. And she's got a fighting chance, but nothing would be bigger than taking a Senate seat away from the Republicans in Texas. And people like our buddy John Bridavo and his Blue Dot Nation are doing everything in their power to make that a reality. And pushing Beto O'Rourke's candidacy for all they're worth. What's this? Question about a Moran. This was in the stack. Scott in San Diego asks, Ron DeSantis has resigned from the House. What does this mean? Is it a sign of confidence that the GOP will keep control of the House after the midterms? Also, that he'll win his race to be Florida's governor, or is it simply a case of a rat jumping ship sooner than some of the others? I can't find any poll numbers to see how he's doing against Andrew Gillum, so I'm counting on you to bring some understanding to this move. DeSantis, as Scott points out, has missed more than half of all the votes in the House since July, and he says, oh, it wouldn't be right for me to take my paycheck, which is, that's a bullshit distraction. What he knows is he's got the fight of his life on his hands, and he's going to need every single minute to get out there and racist dog whistle and disavow Nazi robocalls, except you can't unring a damn bell. And Andrew Gillum, as Brother Deacon Asa points out, is 3 points up right now. In his statement, DeSantis, that would be Ron Monkey DeSantis. Anytime you mention Ron DeSantis, if you tweet about Ron DeSantis or you write on Facebook about Ron DeSantis, refer to him as Ron Monkey DeSantis so that everybody remembers that he's the racist dog whistler who's running as a as the Republican nominee for governor of Florida. He said, as the Republican nominee for governor of Florida, it is clear to me that I will likely miss the vast majority of our remaining session days for this Congress. Under these circumstances, it would be inappropriate for me to accept a salary. In order to honor my principles and protect the taxpayer, I officially resign from the House of Representatives effective immediately. Oddly enough, though, he's not protecting the taxpayer because he's not in Congress to do the job that the people of that district sent him to do. They have no representation. Andrew Gillum has raised about $4 million since he won the Democratic nomination. DeSantis, during the same period of time, has raised about $500,000. And, of course, the Washington Post, among other things, noted that Ron DeSantis had spoken 4 times since 2013 at a conference organized by David Horowitz. David Horowitz is, of course, a racist. How do I know David Horowitz is a racist? Well, David Horowitz said this: African Americans owe their freedom to white people, and the only serious race war in America is against whites. Remember, that's Ron Monkey DeSantis. Whenever and wherever you make reference to him.
Stop telling us how to refer to Ron DeSantis, Bob.
But again, we have to understand that if you're a Republican for running for office in almost any state in this country, you have to have the Nazi vote, the Klan vote, the white supremacist, white nationalist, Breitbart-y vote. You've got to have them because they're little splinter factions of Republicanism. But in a race that's 50.1 to 49.9, those Nazis, those Klansmen, the Kleagles, the Cyclopses, the Grand Dragons, the Obersturmbannführers can make up your margin of victory, just like they did for Donald Trump. He announced his resignation and then pretty much disappeared for the rest of the day today. This evening, there's some sort of a campaign event in Little Havana because, of course, the conventional wisdom is that the Cuban expats in South Florida can always be counted on to vote for a Republican, no matter how nasty and how racist and how vile that Republican is. But I'll be honest. I would find it. I would find it delightful if it turned out that Ron DeSantis had actually resigned his House seat in an effort to hide from some sort of revolting nastiness in which he'd been involved, you know, other than referring to Andrew Gillum as a monkey. But probably not. And one wonders, you know, one wonders how long it will be before Ron DeSantis makes another racist mention or a racist reference. But, you know, it only took one macaca for George Allen in Virginia. And given that he used a racist slur within 24 hours of becoming the actual official nominee in Florida, monkey should be enough. Just don't let him get away from it. Make him wear it. All right. So, that should be fun to watch. In the meantime, back over in Texas, in true Republican form, Beto O'Rourke is being referred to as going hard to the left. Why, he's just like Bernie Sanders. Which I don't believe for a minute. Beto O'Rourke is his own man. What? Hung like Jesus, says Mick Mulvaney referred to. Referred to Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, as a douche canoe? I'll be damned, Mick Mulvaney must be reading Sister Carol Baker's Facebook timeline. Ooh, that's good, too. Les, with a suggestion. Add Klan to DeSantis as well, like Ron Monkey Klansantis. Or, ooh, wait. Sometimes this takes a little work. It takes a little tinkering. Ron Monkey DeClantis. Ooh, that's good. Ron Monkey DeClantis. That's real good. Mm-hmm. What else? Well, like I said, many more ends. A little bit of an update. You remember last week when the news of the anonymous op-ed first came out? Julius Geezer announced it in front of a bunch of sheriffs. Well, somebody got hold of the picture and the list of who the sheriffs were and started taking a look at who they were. And it turns out that these sheriffs have problems of their own, the ones who were so eagerly cheering Trump, like Sheriff Anna Franklin of Morgan County, Alabama. She's under investigation because apparently she used $150,000 in public money to invest in a now bankrupt used car dealership, part owned by a convicted fraudster. Whoa. And the money was taken from a fund meant for feeding inmates from the county jail. Lockhart's grandson was hired by the sheriff's office as a rat, and they paid him to install spyware on Lockhart's computer. Lockhart being Glenda Lockhart, the local news blogger who busted the sheriff in the first place. Anna Franklin says that the stories about her are misinformation, false reports, and slander. Then there's Bristol County, Massachusetts. Sorry, my friends in Massachusetts, that's the way they say it down south. Sheriff Thomas Hodgson. He says that he's been victimized by a witch hunt. And witch hunts are breaking out all over the place. That's because the Attorney General of Massachusetts said that his jail should be investigated because of the number of suicides that have taken place there, along with allegations of mistreatment. He tries to charge inmates $5 a day for being locked up in his jail, and has been known to put prisoners with mental problems in solitary. Sharon Worley of Nye County, Nevada, she's the one who left her Glock 45 caliber service pistol in the potty at a casino. And apparently wasn't the first time she'd mislaid her weapon. Scott Jenkins, Culpeper County, Virginia. Chaos, bullying, and turnover problems in that office. Hostile environment allegations against Jenkins. Yeah. he flies first class, Jenkins does. And he said that was okay because the county was reimbursed by inmates paying fees. Jenkins is a not small guy, and he says he has to fly first class because have you seen the size of coach seats? Now, these are all the people who are just cheering and cheering for Donald Trump. Bunches of them. Folks like Sheriff Todd Richardson of Davis County, Utah. He was found by county auditors to have approved a deputy's bogus time cards, paid out dodgy travel expenses for deputies, and mishandled the money that relatives sent for prisoners at his jail. And had to apologize for a harassment scandal. Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Brevard County, Florida, where one of his deputies was charged with drug and child neglect offenses. Three of his deputies last May were charged with DUI while off duty. Oh, yeah. It goes on and on and on. Michigan, Virginia, Maryland. Sheriff Mike Lewis of Wicomico County, Maryland, in which the sheriff decided to go off on all those uppity African-American protesters at a Baltimore Ravens game. He said they refuse to accept responsibility for your own failures and your own perceived inequities. You won't be victims of injustice if you get off your butt and work for it. Weld County, Colorado, Sheriff Steve Reams, where a deputy is alleged to have murdered his wife It was initially ruled a suicide. The company we keep. The company, well, not with the company we keep, the company he keeps. And by the way, just a quick update on Zena Bash. During the last day of the Kavanaugh hearing, I guess you noticed that she deliberately gave that white power symbol again. You know, the white power symbol that's not a white power symbol. But now it is one. And no explanation for it. And then, unless I'm completely mistaken, she's the woman who replaces plaid shirt guy out in Montana. Behind Trump. When they send him off to be shaken down by the Secret Service for looking funny at the president. Who knew? Who knew that that was a crime? But they did. But of all the interesting things I saw over the weekend, a picture, a photograph, of her husband, the U.S. attorney, a U.S. attorney in Texas, standing around a bunch of guys in body armor with guns, giving that same salute, or gang sign, if you will. But of course, there's nothing to it, and it's totally scurrilous that anyone would ever say anything like that. Because snowflakes. Mm-hmm. So that's just a brief, ever so brief little roundup of the morons that we have assembled for this Moran Monday. There are ever so many more, too. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, well, we call what we do here Conversation Radio. And it works a lot better when I'm not the only one talking. So if you'd like to get involved and you've got something on your mind, something you'd like to bring to the discussion, well, by Jove, stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. And you can reach the program at 304-574-8178. Toll free from anywhere in Canada, Mexico, or the United States, 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. And then there's the stress line, which has been working fantastically of late, named in honor of gone but certainly not forgotten Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, who, my gracious, maybe it's good that he checked out before this madness could begin, or else wouldn't you just love to be hearing from him about right now? Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. And so we call it the stress line. And that number is 304-640-2829. And then, of course, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. Marty says, used car dealership, convicted fraudster, John Elway or Peyton Manning? And yes, I'm still a strong Denver Broncos fan. And by the way, Geezer Disgustus was out there tweeting his brains out. Well, that's kind of an inaccurate statement. He was tweeting, the Spirakeets were tweeting themselves into a frenzy about the NFL's first weekend yesterday. And despite whatever Julius Geezer had to say about it, some damn good football. Culminating last night, of course, with the Bears and the Packers. Yeah, that was just okay. If you were a Bears fan, it was not a great game to be. The first half was fun, if you were a Bears fan. The second half, not so much. And the legend of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay has been carved in stone with what he did. Coming back basically on one leg to lead a 24-point comeback. It was astonishing to behold. And it's driving Donald Trump crazy. And remember, well, it's not driving. He's already crazy. But let's remember, anytime he says anything about the NFL, it's coming from a place of abject jealousy. He's had a hard-on for the NFL ever since the NFL said, no, we won't let you buy a franchise, and he wound up having to go and ruin the USFL. I don't know quite what to make of that. I just got a note from Mark in Florida based on my mention of Zena Bash. And that's the problem with information on the fly like this. I don't have an opportunity to thoroughly suss it out. But, of course, another story that has captured the nation's attention comes out of Dallas with the four-year police officer, the female police officer in Dallas, who gunned down a young black man, arguably in cold blood, and has now been charged with charged with manslaughter. Nothing about the story makes a lick of sense. She had allegedly just gotten off work and went to the wrong floor of her apartment building in a gated apartment community. And when her key wouldn't work in the lock, a black guy opened the door and she just blew him the hell away. She is said to feel terrible about it. But Mark just sent along a photo, along with a Facebook post. The photo shows a woman in a green shirt, and the Facebook post says that is the woman who shot and killed a man in his own apartment when her key wouldn't turn. The person writing says, most people don't think, hey, maybe some black criminal changed the locks while I was gone and is now coming to answer the door. Then she notes, but then again, look at the white supremacist hand signs being given in the photo. There's more to this story than is being let on. And I don't necessarily, that's the thing with this gesture. There's only one way that it means white power. And that is if you are looking at it and it reads from left to right, WP. That's not going on in this photo. Because, among other things, that hand gesture has meant a lot of things over the years, and it was one of those stupid juvenile tricks, you know, where if you look, you know, you look down at it and somebody gets to tweak your little nose or something. But there's decidedly something wrong in that case. It does not make any sense. Marty pointing out that apparently the doors of those apartments use key cards, not regular keys. Did she pound on the door? Why did the young man open the door? Well, because it was a gated apartment complex. Everybody's only supposed to be in there if they've got any business being in there. Subject line, Mr. Stress from James in Illinois. Drumpf would kill him. Then we could charge him with murder. And by the way, James asks, if Roy Moore sues you, would he be suing us? How much more per day will this cost us? Hey, this remains one of the cheapest radio programs out there. Nobody gets asked to listen to any ads for vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls or Buy Gold Now or any of the or nutritional supplements or neuro-linguistic programming bullshit. And we just try to raise $200 a day. Sometimes we don't raise the whole 200, like this evening. So, nope, prices ain't going up any. I'm hoping, you know, if that were to happen, we'd get some real pro bono talent in here. But we've got $269 to raise this evening, and sadly, we remain at $269. And hopefully it won't be that way all night long, because that would mean $469 by Tuesday, and ooh. Yeah, Hung Like Jesus says they're like a clown car of crooked clowns. Maggots, these trumpansies, and what have you. Hard to disagree. Oh, by the way, Joe Manchin has... My senator. Joe Manchin has a new ad out. They invited him onto that morning program so they could show it. A few years ago, he took out a deer rifle and shot the cap and trade bill. Well, apparently, it's a different hunting style when you're hunting when you're hunting for Republican policy proposals. This time, it's a double-barreled shotgun. He only fires one of the barrels. It's an over and under. Looks like a nice piece. He's trying to reprise his past glories by, in this case, shooting the lawsuit to reestablish pre-existing conditions as an exclusion for coverage. Because the Attorney General of West Virginia, his general election opponent in November, pill-pushing Patty Morrissey, signed on to a lawsuit that seeks to take away pre-existing condition protection from about 800,000 West Virginians. And in light of the fact that there aren't many more than 1.5 million West Virginians, that means that roughly half of the people in this state rely on pre-existing condition coverage to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. But Joe shoots down that lawsuit, literally, with a gun. By the way, over at his website, manchin.senate.gov, he is seeking input on Brett Kavanaugh. Now, what does this mean? Is he looking for cover to vote for him? Probably. That's who Joe Manchin is. But you can always go over there, and there's a yellow banner at the top of the page. Tell Joe about Brett. And you can let him know. just fill out the field and, you know, whatever. Maybe use an email address that doesn't matter to you. Will they filter out the ones that aren't from West Virginia? Probably. So maybe you've got an aunt in Roanoke. No, damn it, that's Virginia. Mm-hmm. Now, ordinarily, something like this would probably go to the hold for prayer meeting Wednesday program. But given what's going to be happening in the next few days, we might ought to get it, because this is Moran stuff, too. Without a doubt, this is Moranic. You know Hurricane Florence is at Cat 4 and could strengthen. It could be a genuine beast by the time it gets to where we are. Not just I, but where we, the United States, are. And it bears remembering that Pat Robertson's home office, Francis Marion Robertson, the former liquor supply officer, well, his home office is in Virginia Beach. Nice place, Virginia Beach. You may recall, because tomorrow is September the 11th, you may recall that 17 years ago, more or less, the former liquor supply officer and Jerry Falwell, who is waiting for him with an open spit down in hell, if there really is a hell, they got together after the attacks of September 11th and declared that September 11th was the fault of the lesbians and the secular humanists. And he spent he spent several years trying to pray the gay out of America. So he thought he'd take a turn at praying away a hurricane.
If that hurricane, you know, veers off and goes up into the Atlantic, it'll be harmless, and no lives will be lost, no property will be damaged. What could be a multi-billion dollar property damage will be averted. And I just believe you and I together. The Bible says, where two of you agree on earth as touching anything that they will ask, it'll be done for them by my Father which is in heaven. Now, this is the same Jesus who commanded the wind and the waves when he was out on the Sea of Galilee. He said, "Peace, be still." And they said, "What manner of man is this? The wind and the waves obey him." They will obey our voice if we are together with one accord. Now, together, I'm asking all of us to believe God. I don't want that thing to come in. I don't want it to hurt Region. I don't want it to hurt CBN. I don't want it to tear up these beautiful campus. I don't.
You'll notice he doesn't want it to hurt CBN. He doesn't want it to hurt his bullshit university. He doesn't want it to hurt the campus. It hasn't quite gotten to the "please don't hurt the people Jesus said not to hurt" anymore. You know, the poor. Let's see if the poor get a mention.
I don't want to tear these trees down. I don't want to see any damage. I don't want to bunch.
Wow, trees. Trees get a mention before poor people, who are, of course, the most vulnerable in such an eventuality. Yeah. Trees. I like trees.
It's a glass flowing, and I don't want all over this area that's counting on us to pray for them. So I'm going to ask you right now, put your hand out toward the Atlantic, wherever it is, and let's.
Put your hand out toward the Atlantic, wherever it is. Oh. We have a lot of fun on Moran Mondays. Sometimes it does get a little bit painful, though. Put your hand out toward the Atlantic, wherever it is. You know, Pat, that's not gonna do a whole lot of good, you standing there kind of pointing at Appalachia and everything. No. No. Atlantic, wherever it is.
Speak a word right now in the name of Jesus. In the name of Jesus, you Hurricane Florence, we speak to you in the name of Jesus, and we command the storm to cease its forward motion and go harmlessly into the Atlantic. Go up north, away from land, and veer off. In the name of Jesus, we declare in the name of the Lord that you shall go no farther. You shall do no damage in this area. We declare a shield of protection all over Tidewater, and we declare a shield of protection over those innocent people in the path of this hurricane.
Yeah, but only the innocent ones. Here's the problem. He's a neo-Calvinist, and there aren't any innocent ones. Because we're all conceived in sin. What does that leave? Protect the people who are sitting here in this here church? Yeah, I know. I know. I think we just heard Arnold. Arnold simply noted, holy jumping Jesus. Pray the hurricane away. Pray it away. Too much information, Arnold. I had to take my hand out of the sheep to point towards the Atlantic, wherever it may be. Remember the prayer meeting Wednesday? Wave your donations in the air. Right. Because they've got a multi-camera set up there inside the gospel shop in Virginia Beach. And there's all kinds of... Wait. I see one black guy. But white folks with their arms raised up in the air pushing the hurricane... Now, understand, though, this is a parlor trick, because it's still not a lead pipe cinch that this hurricane hits. In fact, since they started keeping up with this stuff in 1850, none of the hurricanes that started where this one started and have followed a track similar to this one, none of them have actually hit the East Coast. They get so far, they sort of run between Bermuda and the Bahamas, and then the little Keebler elves in the Bermuda Triangle turn it out into the North Atlantic. Hey, you know, at least Marion's not praying for it to hit those godless liberals in New York, New Jersey, and Massachusetts. I mean, I guess we'll... take our victories where we find them. Precisely. Robert in Australia asking, isn't this witchcraft? Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live is in their book, and yet here they are casting a spell to stop a hurricane. It's exactly what it is. But it's good witchcraft when they do it in the name of Jesus. Some folks are going two-handed. They're bringing all of their Jesus witchcraft with them. They're not just going with one hand. Pat's only got one hand pointed toward... And curious... I know, we're talking about video. It's got its limitations, but... They're all pointing pretty much sort of in the same direction, but a couple of people are covering bases by pointing somewhere else just in case the Atlantic Ocean is over there. I mean... Virginia Beach is pretty uniform. The Atlantic Ocean, wherever you are in Virginia Beach, the Atlantic Ocean is to your east. And so, I don't know how much good their witchery is going to be, seeing as how they don't even know where north is.
I know.
Good point. Steve from Georgia Stan says, I don't recall him making a fuss when Katrina was headed for New Orleans or Harvey was headed toward Puerto Rico. Well, you mean Maria. Or Harvey headed for Texas. No. He's got skin in this game. It's very old, flabby, sagging skin, but he's got skin in this game because all of his money's sort of plunked right down there, smack dab in the middle of Virginia Beach. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa points out, remember, Pat, the Lord is a lot like Fido. Unless you point your finger in the right direction, he won't be able to spot the treat. Then again, if he's like Fido, if you point at it, he's going to look at your finger. Ah, okay, well, thank you. Clarity with a clarification. Oops, see what I did there? Bob, it's not witchcraft, it's richcraft.
In Jesus' holy name, be out to sea. In Jesus' name. Thank you, Lord. Thank you. Let's praise God. Yes, amen. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord.
They're clapping for him like he just pulled a goddamn rabbit out of his hat or something. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. But there's a chance that it'll just... And then he'll claim the credit. And the simpletons there in the pews, it'll be one great big giant goddamned old Shake and Beck commercials. And we helped! No outreach from the bucket pudding folk. At least not yet, Clarity. I mean, that's Branson, Missouri. They're not worried. This is Virginia Beach.
Thank you, Lord. And we will live to mark this day and say, I remember I was there. And when we saw that Hurricane Florence averted, we're going to believe God. And Jesus said, when you speak to the mountain and you don't doubt in your heart, it will do the thing that you command it to do. And I believe it with all my heart. That if we don't doubt in our faith, this hurricane will be dispelled. We saw it happen in 1960. I've seen it in year after year after year. Hurricanes tried to get in here and they couldn't do it. It's almost hilarious to see them try. They try to get in and they can't, and then they go north and they turn around and try to come back in. They can't do it. God.
Is he talking about a hurricane or the big bad wolf? He's imputing sentience to a storm system. And we wonder why we... You know, right here, this guy and the people who follow him are why humanity may cease to be a going concern in the not-too-distant future. The dinosaurs were around for millions of years. We may top out at 200,000. Just because we were less successful. And you know, that's a tough pill to swallow. The idea that we were less successful than the dinosaurs. But that's how it tallies out. Because we developed these great big primate brains, and then we shrank a little bit from the Neanderthal brain down to our brains. And we had things, and somewhere along the way, somebody heard it thunder and thought it must be an invisible person, and religion was born. Did I miss it? And I'm not trying to piss off Sparky or anything, but I don't recall Pat showing up in the pulpit praying for the fires to go away from California. Nope. It's only when Pat's assets are on the line.
Has put a shield around it, and that shield has been reactivated today. We are not going to let Hurricane Florence hurt us. In Jesus' name, hallelujah!
You know why he's doing that? Probably because he's self-insured. When you're as rich as Pat is, you don't fool around with, Amalgamated Crimson Assurance or anything like that. No, you self-insure. So that means he's on the hook for whatever damage happens. There's nobody gonna pick up the tab on that. I don't know. Maybe the 6-foot-tall sentient race of cockroaches a few million years from now will be better at this. Because there's not enough power in that room to stop a hurricane. But there's enough ignorance in that room to stop a species. And that's fact. These are people who are going to go out and get in vehicles that are run by internal combustion engines, and they're going to go home. And I guess they're going to rely on angels under the hood to make the engine go. The stupid is breathtaking. Earther says, Pat's resorting to the power of Christ compels you to save his facilities? Go on now, Hurricane. Shoo! Get on out of here, demon Hurricane. Yeah, Earther gets a cowbell for that. Speaking of Florence, says Ron and Raleigh, I foolishly went to the grocery store to pick up some eggs. I was down to one. Man, you'd think it was the apocalypse. There's going to be a lot of French toast made this week. Since they closed down my Kroger, I'm forced to go to the Harris Teeter. What a cluster that is. I may have a Costco and a Trader Joe's, but I envy you your Kroger. I had a nice little run of luck at Kroger's this weekend. Flatiron steaks were marked down. And so I got a couple. And I'd been saying was just itching to try the new grill plates for the little portable gas grill. I wanted to see what I could do with it. And so I put on a fresh bottle, a 1-pound bottle of propane, and I put those grill plates on, and I got them nice and hot. And speaking of eggs, I cracked a couple of eggs and scrambled them right there on the griddle, and then Agnes had made up some rice with some peas and carrots in it. Threw it right on those grill plates, hit it with the butter and the soy sauce, you know, Japanese restaurant style, tossed it around a little bit, moved it all over to one of the griddles, covered it for a little bit, and on the other side I put my flat iron steaks that had been marinating in teriyaki sauce, a little lemon juice, a little lime juice, a little garlic, you know, can't resist tinkering. But they'd been that way for about 24 hours. And, it worked. It worked out well. It's not big enough to do the whole Japanese hibachi, you know, theater stuff with the thing, the spatulas and the dinging and the onion volcano and all of that stuff. But Agnes assured me that she had never had better fried rice. And the beef was just, tender and flavorful. So it was basically beef fried rice. And it worked out nicely. And that's because those flat iron steaks came from Kroger's. Um, still haven't gotten around to trying. I'm working on the sourdough starter now for the sourdough pancakes, so we'll see. That's up next. Yeah, I'd miss Kroger's, too. I really, really would. By the way, Agnes heard me talking just now, and she just texted me and said the rice was awesome. Yeah, didn't have any Japanese sticky rice, so I opted for some jasmine rice. It worked out very, very well. Scott in San Diego says, subject line, put your hand, dot, dot, dot. I've heard tell of more than a few reports of churches getting smashed to smithereens by tornadoes. Pancake flat, I'm telling you. I don't hold out much hope that Pat Robertson's urgent pleas for his gullible flock to engage in some Jesus hand jive to steer the hurricane out to the Atlantic. Wondering, if Jesus tried it, would the fierce winds make a whistling sound through the holes in his hands? Oh, yeah, that's also why he can't eat M&Ms. They fall through the holes in his hands. Yeah. It maybe if he put a little whistler in the hood. Yeah, right. Our buddy Tara says, NIMBY, Lord. NIMBY. NIMBY. Not in my backyard. Be out to sea. That's the letter B. Out to the letter C. Be out to sea. Praise Lord. Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, Marty says, perhaps Blood Diamond Pat should appeal to the NTI, the non-terrestrial intelligence aliens at the bottom of the ocean. Non-obligatory reference to James Cameron's The Abyss. I love The Abyss. It's one of my, I like The Abyss better than Titanic as your James Cameron movies go. Funny that way. Yeah, Randy points out, some of the models have it stalling right near the outer banks, thus clobbering them real good. Only one model has it totally out to sea. That must be the Jesus model. That's right, Randy. And then it just goes and wanders around the Atlantic for a while. And oh, these people. These people. Meanwhile, Robert in Australia with the obligatory Star Trek references. Shields at 35%, Captain. You guys make this insanity bearable. You're why I can do this every night. Because if it's just me sitting here watching this and dealing with it, Agnes would probably throw me out after a while because she just gets tired of me. Hey, honey, did you see Pat Robertson praying the hurricane away? Albert in Rhode Island. Hey, Bob, what do you think he'll say if the hurricane nails Virginia Beach with Cat 5 winds and rain? Well, that'll be because the gay, lesbian, secular, humanist witches in Virginia Beach invited the storm on shore by their gay, lesbian, witch sex. That's what that'll be, Albert. I mean, you got to give me a hard question, buddy. That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, your gay lesbian witches become twice as powerful when they get to get married. Yeah, little known fact. Let's go over and see what Scott's going on. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. They melt in your mouth, not in your hand.
Yeah, right.
This is why Jesus would never be a spokesmodel for M&M's.
Could he be the anchor? Could he be the anchor man in a tug of war?
Possibly. I hadn't considered that.
Yeah, just run the rope through, tie a knot behind it, you know, nail him up. I'd say you're going to win.
The reason I called, I wasn't going to call today. I was going to sit back and just enjoy the show and puff on my pipe that arrived a couple of days ago.
You're having fun with that pipe, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm going to send you a picture. when I get around to it. And I ordered another one, Bob, and some more tobacco. Did you look at that little video I sent you over the weekend of that? I can only describe the guy as a pipe tobacco hoarder. This guy had more tins and pouches of more.
Yeah, see, I have a nervous breakdown just trying to figure out what to smoke.
Well, if you watch it a couple of times in the video, and the thing runs about 40 minutes. I've never seen compulsion like this poor guy is caught up in. A couple of points in the video, he's listing all of the pipe tobaccos that he has in pouches and tins and canisters and, you know, mason jars and all kinds of stuff. And at a couple of points in the video, he gets to one and he says, "Now I can't remember whether I tried that or not." And then he moves on to the next one and he gives his take on another half dozen or dozen. And he gets to another one and he says, "Well, I think when I had this one, I liked it at first, but then I didn't like it." But the guy must have had 4,000 tins and pouches of various and sundry tobaccos. And if you gave up sleep and eating and everything else altogether, you'd have to live to be 112 to smoke all that damn tobacco. Because, you know, the pleasures of a pipe, the main one is you fiddle with it and you puff on it and you sit back and you kick back and you contemplate. And it takes a good 10 or 15 or 20 minutes to smoke a bowl of pipe tobacco in a meaningful, enjoyable way. So I hope I never get to that point. But I ordered a corn cob, a Missouri Meerschaum corn cob, that was inexpensive, and a couple of other tobaccos. But after that, I promise, I will enjoy what I have, and then maybe after, you know, Christmas or the first of the year or whatever, I'll shop again. Because I know me, I'm you know, if one is good, two are better, and a room full of them is grand, you know? But anyway, that's not why I called. Over the long Labor Day weekend, AT&T UVerse, along with some other cable systems, offered a free preview of some premium channels that I don't have. And one of the things that I recorded on the old DVR was a Kevin Smith stand-up. Let me key it in here so I can give you the correct name. Wait a minute. This is a lack of preparedness on my part. You may have heard in the news some months ago that he was somewhere doing a performance, went back to the green room after an hour's worth of stellar performing, and had a kind of heart attack that is commonly referred to as a widowmaker. Do you remember that story about...
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Bob?
Scott?
Did you hear that?
I heard Widowmaker, and you asked me if I said, and I said, yes, I do.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. I thought maybe Jesus had come to get me after my snarky email. But that was one of the things that I recorded. It's called Silent But Deadly. And had his health scare gone the other way, it would have been a stellar performance to go out on. But luckily, Kevin Smith is upright and above ground and funny as hell. But the name of this piece was Silent But Deadly, was the name of the comedy, the stand-up comedy presentation. And if you have a chance to see it, I think it was originally on Showtime, but you might be able to find it online somewhere. I am telling you, he was cooking on all burners. Plus, he had the griddle and the oven going. It was comedy that I mean, he was just nailing it from the time he took the stage to the time he walked off. And anyway, so if you get a chance to see that, I recommend it. Silent but Deadly, Kevin Smith. And he's a funny guy anyway. Back when I had AMC, I used to like his Comic Book Men series. And, of course, Clerks was a classic film that he did, which is how I had heard about him originally. But anyway, other than that, there's not much going on. I what are we, about 57 days now until the November election?
Well, let's see, 31, 41, 51. By God, you've got it nailed it. Yep.
Good. Good. And I'm
Do you have an advent calendar or something?
No, I don't.
Little bowls of tobacco, you know, sort of pinned to it. Did you get one a day?
No, I just the other day someone on the news mentioned it was 59 days, so I just guesstimated. But I'm telling, I mean, on Facebook to all my friends and associates and people, I'm saying, you know, be sure that you're registered. And find out where your polling place is and get your friends, neighbors, relatives, and associates who are of a like mind to register. And let's, you know, in a loud, steady voice, send a message November 6th that we're, you know, as Howard Beale said, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take this anymore. And retake the House, and which will be, you know, it's like planting our flag in a battle, saying, you know, or as Popeye used to say, you know, that's all I can stands. I can't stands no more.
Well, you know, you raise indirectly an interesting issue, and I don't know what Florida law is on the thing, so the Horn Research Department will have to take over here.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder what they're going to do about Ron Monkey DeClantis's seat.
Yeah, because he would have been up for his House seat.
I don't think he could run for both. So I guess
some states prohibit that. Yeah,
I guess they've got a Republican nominee and a Democratic nominee for it, but that seat has to remain vacant through these next 57 days.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, most states have a specific deadline for changes or additions or deletions on the ballot. And I don't offhand know what Florida's deadline is. That's a good question, because whoever is running against him for that, or would have been running against him for that House seat, will be unopposed unless there are third-party candidates. What area does he cover in Florida? I forgot.
I honestly don't know.
Okay.
Again, that's the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department stuff. I got to share something with you, though, different topic, the hurricane.
Okay.
Randy in PA just kindly sent me a graphic showing the various and sundry computer models.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that goes right across the northern panhandle of Florida. It's kind of isolated.
Yeah.
There's another one that just sort of wanders out into the middle of the North Atlantic. That would be your Jesus model. What's really weird, though, there's one here that's in kind of it's sort of a light neon green that just wanders around off the coast for a while. Sort of like it's drunk or something. Maybe that's the wall o' Pat prayer. I don't know. But the rest of them just shoot straight and true. Looks like almost all the models come ashore in North Carolina.
Yeah.
There's one really bizarre one that comes ashore in Virginia and then loops back through Maryland, PA, and New Jersey and then heads back out to sea some more.
Well, is this the hurricane that had it gone steady and true into over Florida wasn't it big enough to virtually cover the entire state of Florida, panhandle included?
Oh, I think so. And look, that there's two more cooking behind them, Helene and Isaac.
Yeah, geez. I don't know why anyone would live, well, for any number of reasons, but weather-related, I don't know why anybody would live in Florida, given the risks of I mean, tornadoes are bad enough, and I lived through some of those in the Midwest, and out here we have fires and mudslides and earthquakes. But for the most part, except for fires, those are pretty random. I mean, pretty infrequent. They're, you know, earthquakes and landslides, mudslides. But goddamn, those hurricanes, I mean, at least you can see them coming and plan accordingly. Do the bread, milk, and toilet paper routine down at your local...
You left the eggs out.
Or an eggs, yeah. Don't forget the eggs. Did you bring the eggs?
Yeah, right, yes.
And with a tornado, you get some warning, maybe 20 minutes if you're lucky. Hurricanes, depending on the, you know, the plot line. But hell, I mean, whoever invented those trend lines for the hurricane forecasts must have gotten the idea after dropping a colander of spaghetti on the kitchen floor, because they look all for all the world, you know, like somebody taking spaghetti and. You know,
well, I mean, I find the idea of computer modeling these things to be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
And the idea that you can have so many models with so many disparate outcomes.
Well, it's sort of like a 1-900 psychic. You know, they can pretty much be so nebulous in their forecast for you that just about anything you ask them, they will come up with an answer about it, which, you know, more than likely is going to be accurate because it's so generic. I mean, I look at these things on the map and I wonder what is the rhyme and reason? Why are there so many strands? And what are, like you say, what are they based on? What, you know, because they didn't used to do them that way. I mean, you know, in terms of forecast.
Well, I think more people got into the business, or more organizations got into the business.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because over the years they've
Because it's not like to... the it's not like the graphic says Apple, Commodore 64. It's the human. As far as I can tell, it's the human impact on the models. I mean, soon somebody has to enter the data, and that's what makes them come out the way they do.
And I think they get that from buoys and, you know, that are electronically monitored and, you know, the planes that fly through the, you know, storms. And there's probably other ways that they, you know, satellite imagery. But what I'm wondering is, like you're wondering, how does all of that data fed into whatever the computer program is, how does that end up with all those spaghetti strings? That's fascinating. I don't know enough about.
I presume they're all different computer models. And Randy tells me, and I don't necessarily know what this means. It takes parallel processing of massive capacity to produce weather models.
Say that again.
It takes parallel processing of massive capacity to produce weather models.
That would make a lovely needlepoint sampler.
Cross-stitch, damn it. That's not needlepoint. Yeah. That's cross-stitch.
Well, that's what I'll do. I'll sit here with my pipe, rocking in my chair with my cross-stitch on my lap and the cat purring in the window. God, James Whistler would have a field day capturing me on canvas.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I cannot get used to seeing the L.A. Chargers on an NFL scoreboard.
Yeah, I didn't follow them when they were here, and I sure as hell, I mean, if they're going to pull a Baltimore Colts or a, what was that other team that split in the dead of night some years ago?
Well, that was the Browns. The Art Modell took the Browns, moved them to Baltimore, and became the Ravens.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah, well, it's. See, there is something to be said for loyalty, and for all the goddamn money that the taxpayers, you know, shoved. You know, it's like one of those things that the croupier pulls the chips in after the wheel has spun.
Yeah.
But in reverse, pushing the taxpayers and the city council and the mayor pushing the goddamn money by the millions to the owners of the Chargers. And their snit basically was, we want a new stadium and we don't want to pay for it. And a proposition, and the taxpayers, you know, gave them the old bird. And whoever the owners of the Chargers were said, screw it, we'll go to L.A. or Phoenix. Or there was a bunch of places that wanted them. So screw
well,
them.
Like I said, that game last night was just amazing. But for sheer goddess of irony stuff,
yeah.
How snake bit do you have to be, Scott, to break a double-digit losing streak and still not win a football game?
Well, maybe there's a curse associated with the... Now, you are talking... Because I didn't see the game. You are talking about the Chargers.
No, I'm talking about the Browns and the Steelers.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the Steelers fans have got to be just having a... I mean, I checked in. It was not pretty in Pittsburgh this morning. But, you know, the Browns hadn't won a game since God was a baby. And they managed not to lose this one, but they still didn't win. One of those rarest of rare things.
Yeah.
A tie in overtime occurred. So both the Steelers and the Browns are 0-0-1.
Hmm. I don't know. Which of the Chicago baseball teams is the one? It was the White Sox, I guess, who were known as the Black Sox, who were almost as bad as Boston was in terms of finally winning a World Series, and the White Sox still haven't. You know, and people go to their graves, and there were some in Boston who went to their graves. For years, decades, lived up until their 80s or 90s, and never lived to see the Red Sox win a World Series to their dying day. It was their hope every spring, maybe this year. This will be the year.
No. You had me confused. Yeah, the White Sox actually won a World Series in 2005.
Okay, but what I'm saying is the fans, many of whom went their entire lives, and every spring it was the same. Optimism reigned supreme. Maybe this year. This will be the year. We're going to do it this year. You know, and only to have, I don't mean to mix my metaphors, but only to have Lucy, who is sometimes known as the goddess of irony, snatch that football and Charlie Brown goes womp on his poor back. You know, and I just don't have the patience or the inclination to get worked up. I mean, elective politics is enough of a hope challenge for me without, getting baseball and football into the cycle. I mean, because it's like, to me, it's the toy department. Athletic prowess is nice and performance is wonderful and, you know, fan appreciation and team spirit, all of that stuff is grand and glorious if you're into it. but I just lack that gene. Although when I was younger, I did follow professional bowling for a while. So go figure. Apparently there's some latent thing going on in an odd kind of way, because some people don't even see bowling as a sport. And it's hard to make it exciting in those hushed tones. It's worse than golf, you know, when you go for those, you know, tense, hushed commentaries by Chris Schenkel or whoever's at the bowling alley. And that used to be a big thing. I don't know if it still is. I'm rambling the hell out of this call.
No,
I really am.
You're, no, you're doing fine, but yeah.
You got to talk me in off the ledge, because I'm in kind of, I talked to my niece last night, who I'd been out of touch with for a long time. She lives up in Montana. And we had a real nice chat last night. And, I was in kind of an expansive mood, in talking with her for a couple of hours. And maybe this is a carryover of that, you know, just rambling.
Well, sometimes that's good. Well, especially when it's family.
I noticed, not to veer off into something else too suddenly, but I will. You've heard tell of the book Fear by Bob Woodward.
Right.
And over the years, I've read a number of his books. I read All the President's Men. I read The Final Days. I read his book about Mark Felt that came out about 8-10 years ago after Felt died. And I think one other. I think, didn't Woodward do the book about the Supreme Court, The Nine, I think was the name of it?
Was that him and Bernstein, or I remember?
No, I think Scott, he was a Senate investigator. Scott Armstrong, I think, was his co-author on that one. But it was about the Supreme Court, and I think it came out in the 80s. It's been a while since I read it. But the reason I bring it up, I noticed that until tomorrow, Amazon has a pre-order price of $18 for a $30 book, hardback. And I'm wondering if that's a viable investment. It's very juicy from what we've heard so far. And he's usually pretty good in terms of, you know, really sussing out his sources. And
well, yeah, that's like something that Kelly wrote just a few minutes ago in regard to Woodward. She said, at this stage of his life, there's no way he would risk his reputation by being wrong about anything in that new book.
Yeah.
And the one thing that he does do is that he is pretty meticulous. He's said to be pretty meticulous in terms of noting his sources and getting recordings where possible. I mean, he's made some missteps over the years.
Yeah.
He absolutely trashed John Belushi and did his career no favors with that.
Was that Wired?
I think so. And then wasn't there kind of a cheerleader book for the Reign of Error?
Well, that was weird. That's what brings this question up, because he wrote no less than two or three books during W's two terms. And I don't know that it was cheerleading, but he didn't seem to drop the hammer like he did with Nixon. And that gave me pause back when those books came out, because I saw interviews and panels and stuff on C-SPAN. There were at least two or three books. It was like a whole series of them. And I think he did one on Obama during Obama's time in office, didn't he?
I can't remember right offhand, but the thing, I mean, Julius Geezer went, well, it madder than usual. He's still tweeting, you know, Jeremy ads against this book.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, it only shows the degree to which the palace intrigue is intersecting with the necessity to keep the baby in the adult daycare happy. I mean, of all the weird shit that was out there yesterday, probably the weirdest was the interview that Mike Pencilneck Geek gave.
You read my mind. I was going to ask you what you thought of that.
Have you polygraphed your staff? Well, I don't have to because I know their hearts.
You know, why would we need to do that?
You know, people are swearing up and down it's his chief of staff, a guy named Ayers. But it can't be Pence himself because Pence can't be fired. Right? And the New York Times implied that they were withholding identity because of what it could do to the person if the person was outed. Now, here's an interesting... No, okay. This is just shameless speculation. This is the kind of stuff that you get into over brown liquor in a wood-paneled library with some classical music playing in the background and somebody smoking a pipe.
Yes, in a jacket with leather patches on the elbows.
Bingo.
Yeah.
You can't fire the vice president, but here's a fun one. Would the Republican Party in the House impeach Mike Pence if it turned out to be him?
Well,
I mean that's real chewy, isn't it?
Well, that question is along the lines of what would they do, the Trumpansies, if presented with a pair of Nike sneakers with an American flag design? That's right up there with that type of question.
Well, sure, and actually that has a real world version, because out there in the real world there are bright red Converse Chuck Taylors emblazoned "Make America Great Again" and Trump along the side.
For real?
For real?
Damn.
Converse is owned by Nike.
I never knew that. I wouldn't have ordered my Jack Purcells a couple of months ago. They look kind of like the low-cut Chuck Taylors, but the bottom of them is different, and the design is slightly different.
But I like those
sneakers. They're different. But yeah, I mean, the House, and the Republicans generally are talking a good game. And like Pence did in that interview that was on Face the Nation yesterday, which is where I saw it, they're all speaking with the confidence, as Mark Twain said, of a Christian holding four aces. And I don't think that that's justified given the mind of the people. And when I say the people, I'm talking to voters other than Trumpansies. I mean, even some so-called moderate suburbs dwelling Republicans who may have gone for Trump in a fit of madness in 2016, even they are looking at the effect that he's having on the discourse and saying, you know, maybe we need a course correction on some level in 57 days. But the Republicans are speaking with a confidence that has got to be a put-up job. Because it's like that question I posed about DeSantis, giving up his House seat Was it a matter of confidence on his part, thinking the GOP will retain control of the House and or that he'll win the governor's race in Florida? Or is he whistling past the proverbial graveyard, to instill some measure of confidence on the part of the voters and the public? Inquiring minds, Bob. I mean, I don't know, but I my gut tells me that they're scared in some races. And hell, when you've got, who was it that said that Beto was going to win had a 30% chance that Cruz would go down in Texas?
Something against, like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then you have the problem of, well, was he just saying that to instill confidence on our side? These rat fuckers didn't get to be rat fuckers with such proficiency as they have, on no basis. I mean, there's a reason they're so good at being bad. So, I don't know. I just hope to God or whoever's listening, the giant spaghetti monster, maybe the giant spaghetti monster came up with the computer modeling for tornadoes.
Well, no, if the flying spaghetti monster had come up with those models, Scott, there would be at least two great big meatballs floating out in the Atlantic.
Speaking of meatballs, let's send Pat Robertson out to the Atlantic so that he will be harmless, or at least something like,
oh, God,
along the line. That crazy bastard.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. So if it turns out that Florence just, not that I want it to, but let's say that something weird happens and Florence just, that just reaches down and wipes out Regent University and CBN and all everything of Pat Robertson's. What are the people in those pews going to do? Because obviously
two hands next time.
Well, no, some of them weren't. Maybe actually go out and figure out which way the Atlantic is. How about that?
No, the
sinfulness of this nation was just too great, and God withdrew his veil of protection. That's how that works.
And wasn't there a story connected to Jesus in the boat with the disciples and the peace be still thing? Wasn't there a lesson? And was that combined?
Yeah,
with
the disciples didn't have this. The disciples didn't have sufficient faith, and it, bloop, 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 bloop.
Yeah. Jeez. The things people believe. I am, Trumpanzees notwithstanding, because there is some overlap. Some of the religious beliefs, so-called, of these people. Is,
well, half the time, Scott, they don't even know what they believe.
I mean, under any other circumstance, they would be certifiable. You'd put them in a room with inflatable wallpaper and slide their meals in a little slot at the bottom of the door.
With rubber forks, yes.
Yeah, the sleeves on this jacket are awfully long. And what are these buckles in the back?
Stylish. I wish I could reach them.
I one part of me, and this is the eternal, relentless optimist coming to the fore. On one part of me, Trump and the Trumpanzees and the madness that reigns on social media, one part of me thinks perhaps this is their last hurrah. Maybe they see the handwriting on the wall. Maybe they know that time is fleeting. And times are changing, and their time may soon be over, and they're giving it one last thrust or push, for old time's sake, knowing that inevitably in the next 10 years that they will no longer be the force that they appear to be now.
Well, they're very, look, the Republican Party is not a unified force now. They just happen to be, you know, a pack of hyenas that can all be led in the same direction as long as the as long as the wounded gazelle is pointed out to them. Okay, because the Republican Party is actually an amorphous group of white supremacists, neo-Nazis, people, self-absorbed people who care about nothing but themselves. Religious maniacs, and you know, these are a whole bunch of little circles in a Venn diagram with a shit ton of overlap.
Yeah.
You know, the neo-Nazis and the Klansmen have some overlap. The evangelical Christians and the Klansmen have some overlap. Remember, the Klan is a Christian organization. But they are, you know, the only time they're a unified force is when they have something to unify them. And that usually happens in presidential election years.
And Trump was the perfect candidate for them, because in their minds,
well, he was made the perfect candidate, Scott.
Well, but in their otherwise empty heads, it reverberates. He is articulating the popular madness, at least according to them.
Yeah, because they speak caveman grunt. Ammonish.
Well, yeah.
Ammonish. Ammonish.
See, I'm a fan of polygrip. You can't beat that stuff, and Trump will need to invest in a tube.
But they say he doesn't have dentures.
I know.
I mean, maybe if you squirt the polygrip in his ear.
Well, it does have sticking properties. Maybe a good bead of it across his lips from left to right.
Oh, I think he was just dosed to the eyeballs, that's all.
Oh, and adhesives. That reminds me of another thing I want to put out for the Horn family. You know that Elmer's glue that school children use for projects?
Yes.
Can that be used for wood if I want to reattach a leg to a little table? Or do I go for the Elmer's wood glue?
I'd go to the Elmer's wood glue if I were you.
Okay, because I have a little project I've got to do this week.
I mean, if it's got a bear any weight or anything, you want something that's job specific.
Okay. Well, I'll add that to my list. I'm going to make some soup tonight, I think, because we're starting
with Elmer's glue.
No, no. there was a comma or a period, a full stop that should have been
paragraph.
Yeah, I knew. You know, hit the return key. I've got to go out grocery shopping later to get ingredients for my soup. It's the base of it is a package of we'll do a little food porn to close out this call. The base of it is a package of Knorr dry mix, a package of dry soup mix, Knorr vegetable.
Oh, that's good stuff. All the Knorr stuff is wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Fix that according to label directions. But I think instead of 4 cups of water for this purpose, only use 3. So prepare that. And then to that, you add, where's my list? You add black bean, a can of black beans, a can of carrots, a can of shoestring beets, a can of sliced potatoes, a can of Italian-based Kroger tomatoes, a can of limas, a can of green beans, a can of white and yellow corn, a can of broth, and chop up a head of cabbage. And get that going real good. And then after that has gone for about 90 minutes, you add 2 cans of chicken and rice soup. And I always chop up some turkey breast and throw that in there, and fix up a package of Mahatma brand yellow rice toward the end of the recipe and put that in there, all in a big old pot. And I'm telling you, that makes for some hearty soup.
That sounds like some that sounds like improvised hillbilly soup. But all those cans. I mean, you take public transport, right?
Yeah.
Tote
bags.
Yeah, but why wouldn't you go with some frozens? That it seems like that would cut down on your weight a little bit.
Well, no,
like
let me think
frozen
about
corn,
this.
Frozen bean. You know, you can get that frozen veg all kind of mix. You know.
Oh, well, I hadn't even considered frozen. Well, maybe I'll do that for some of these.
And thicken it with a little bit, you know, I don't know, maybe not out there, but around here you can get not breaded or anything. It's just frozen sliced okra.
I haven't had okra for years.
And that serves as a nice thickener in something like, in a soup like that.
You know, well, the yellow rice tends to thicken.
Oh, well, it just soaks everything up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, not all of it, but usually I keep an extra can of broth on hand, you know, to add to it. But man, especially after the second and third day of refrigerating it overnight and then heating it up, oh, baby, it's some yummy soup. And you said a hillbilly recipe. You've heard tell of my great-great Aunt Emma.
Yeah, oh, okay? Absolutely, yes.
She used to make a similar soup, except she would chop up chunks of beef. That was really the only difference. And I don't think she used the Knorr soup to start it. But yeah, her beef vegetable soup, oh, it was to die for. And we're getting to be that time of year. The holidays will be here soon. I will need to post or send to you her sister, Aunt Effie's pound cake recipe.
Was Aunt Effie the one with the parrot?
Well, they in their later years, they lived together, and they had a parakeet, Pete the parakeet.
Yeah, Pete. Okay, yes.
Yeah, and then Pete died, and they got a canary, which I don't even think they named the canary because he just didn't have the personality. But Aunt Effie had a recipe for a pound cake that required a dozen eggs, a pound of butter, and I don't know what all.
Oh, dear
and
God.
Oh, God. It is the richest, moistest, most delicious.
Oh, you cream the sugar with all that that butter. And
yes, yes. And you separate the eggs, and I'll do the Three Stooges routine. Egg in the right hand, egg in the left hand. Is this far enough?
Yeah.
Okay. But, oh, God, and it was an old recipe when she was a little girl, and she was born in, like, 1867. So that gives you a rough idea how old the recipe is.
Well, I'll bet you that recipe, knowing that it was coming from a couple of little old Southern ladies, and that it was an old recipe even then, at some point in time in its origin, I will just bet you that a cake that rich and that dense got soaked in rum or brandy or something, because that's how little old ladies caught a buzz.
Well, every year she would make two. She would make one without the cheesecloth wrapped, rum-soaked cheesecloth wrapping. To answer your question, well, she died in 62, so I knew her toward her last few years. And those two sisters, Aunt Emma was a, chirps is scratching. She's sitting in, I told you about the Amazon box.
Yes.
That I put on the floor, and you cannot get her out of it. That is her, it's a perfect cat size for her to curl up in. And she was just scratching, sitting in the box. And her paw
well, I thought maybe a neighbor was knocking on the door to see if you'd do their barbecue for their church reunion. That's what happened to me the other night.
No, she was making that noise because her foot was hitting the box, but because she was scratching. But two sisters, Emma and Effie. Emma was the wild child. I'm sure she was a flapper in the 1920s. She probably smoked a little dope now and then. Well, hell, in the 1940s, she was busted for running numbers. in Alexandria. I'm sure if you go down the basement of the police department and look under her name, you can find the arrest report. She was the black sheep. She was the wild child of the Klan, which is where I get my piss and vinegar from. But her sister, who was a few years older, was a tall, for the time, regal, rather thin, rather stately, prim and proper, old English sort of bearing, Victorian even. And you couldn't have two sisters more different than those two. But Effie's concession to Breaking Bad and Running Wild was every Tuesday or Thursday night, they would have the professional wrestling from either Bridgeport, Connecticut, or the Washington, D.C. arena, where the Beatles later played, the wrestling matches on television. And Effie would fix up a plate of egg salad sandwiches, and she would sit there with her TV tray and a can of Hams beer, and she would get caught up in the action of the professional wrestling.
Hit him with the chair!
Well, and she'd say, kill him! Kill him! Scratch his eyes out! Kick him! Bite him! Kill him! And she would want you to turn the volume of the TV down because she didn't like the sound of them grunting and writhing in pain. You know, and yet you would think it was a whole different person compared to her normal demeanor.
Yeah, what does it say that my grandmother was born in 1894. What does it say that the two things that she believed were absolutely real were her Christian faith in Jesus Christ and professional wrestling?
Well, that's common among people of that time. That is. And every summer, the professional wrestlers would come to Alexandria for like one night only in the center of the football field at the old George Washington High School, which was about a half a mile from Aunt Emma's house. And we would go to the live wrestling matches. And I will never forget the night that, and I've told this before, but it bears repeating, that Haystacks Calhoun, 612 pounds of pure wrestler, bearded, wore a horseshoe on a chain around his neck, wore overalls and was barefoot. Haystack Calhoun went up against three regular-sized wrestlers. And at some point, they managed to lift him, or what passed for lifting a 612-pound man, raised him up a little, and then dropped him. And he made a haystack, which put an end for about an hour to the proceedings while they did a repair job on the ring. I mean, it was a spectacular moment, and I will remember it, you know, unless Alzheimer's gets me in my later years. It was an indelible moment in my young life. I couldn't
you kind of dropped
than,
out there. He made a hole in the mat.
Now you dropped out.
So you dropped out. He made a hole in the mat in the ring?
Yeah, they dropped him, and he broke clean through the mat of the wrestling ring. And they had to they had to repair the ring. It took an hour.
You got me thinking. I mean, in her later years, I mean, she still had her mind, but she was my grandmother was quite set on this notion.
Now, she was the one they had to hide her shoes, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, okay,
yes.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
But she was absolutely convinced that if the United States adopted the metric system, that we would no longer be able to tell time.
Hmm.
Because we'd have to use a metric clock and a metric calendar.
Oh, no.
And, you know, my mother would say, just let it go, son. Just let it go. Grand, no. I mean, you can't.
My grandmother thought that the weather didn't begin to go wacky until they started sending people to the moon. She believed that right up to the end. And you could explain, you know.
Right, yeah.
Till you were blue in the face and she wouldn't
By the
know.
Way, Brother Deacon Asa wants to know, is that the same great aunt with the cashmere bouquet powder, Scott?
Yeah, Effie was the fan of the cashmere bouquet and a big believer in the health benefits of sal hepatica, which I think was a laxative.
Oh, dear God. Hey, by the way, you just got a comment from Alexander. How could Effie be the black sheep of the family when she was white?
No, no, Emma was the wild child.
Well, still, she was white.
Well, and that's probably not a good expression to use. You know, like Indian giver is not a good expression to use. What would I say other than black sheep to describe her attitude in life? Wild child?
Well, that would work. I mean, but that's a reference. But anyway, that's a reference to sheep and not people. But
yeah,
just to say.
Well, to give you a sense of her attitude, there were some relatives who were quite judgmental when it came to. I mean, she had some friends, and they every Friday they would take her and me down to Marshall Hall Amusement Park in, I guess, Charles County, Maryland, on the Potomac River, just south on the Maryland side, just south of where Mount Vernon is, to give you a point of reference.
Okay.
And it was an amusement park, had a big old wooden roller coaster and all the typical rides and the bumper cars and the sideshow, not sideshow, but you know, the ring toss and the thing where you win the goldfish and, you know, just everything you would want in an old school amusement park.
Right.
They had a swimming pool and a kiddie pool for the little ones. Plus, they had a structure known as Happy Land. And what Happy Land was a big room, and there was a bar at one end. You could actually get liquor by the drink in Maryland, or beer anyway. But it was filled with slot machines. And Aunt Emma used to love dropping nickels into the slot machine. And she would sit there with her... did they have red Solo cups back then?
No, I don't think so, but I know what you mean.
Well, she had her cup of nickels.
Yeah, it was probably paper.
And, yeah, well, when she win a jackpot, which she would from time to time, she'd just pour it into the... dump it into the cup... But by the end of the night, her cup was empty. She never walked away with her winnings. But she loved playing those slot machines.
Well, hey, let me transition real quick to two guys. Unless you surprise me,
mm-hmm.
Two guys talking about something they have no understanding of whatsoever.
Is that us?
Yeah.
Oh no.
Tennis.
Oh God.
I saw the U.S. Open controversy with Venus. With Serena Williams. And I don't have an investment. I mean, I've got an investment in college football. I got an investment in Major League Baseball. Some NFL, a little bit of NBA. I could never get tennis because I was no good at it. I was no good at golf either, but at least I understand that tennis, just no. But I recognize the supreme athleticism that it takes to be great at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the business with Serena Williams looks pretty shitty from where I stand. But what really got me was the guy who works, he's an editorial cartoonist. And it took him no time flat to do an absolutely, you know, and I mean, it's, I'd like to know where... Why is this so easy?
Or what was the gist of the cartoon? Because I followed it only enough to know that it occurred.
Well, it was an editorial cartoon that depicted Serena throwing a fit over the penalty. Okay? But it did two things. One, and I'm using the words of Jamil Smith, a guy I follow on and know, I know him distantly. He used to work for MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
Nice guy. The cartoonist is Mark Knight for the Herald Sun, which I think is a Murdoch paper in Australia.
Oh.
Now, Serena Williams was beaten, and probably, even without all the drama, would have lost to her opponent, a young woman of Haitian and Japanese descent named Osaka. And it detracted from her historic victory. But
sort of like that night at the Oscars a couple of years ago when they announced the wrong best picture along those lines? Or
well, I mean, yeah, but this was even worse because she was whipping Serena Williams.
Yeah.
And she was living a dream. I mean, it was the U.S. Open, for God's sakes. I mean, I don't care for tennis, but at least I understand that's a major. Well, Jamil Smith tweeted earlier, and I caught it, said, "This is Jim Crow racist. He samboed Serena Williams." I'm a bit surprised that Knight Cartoons didn't include a watermelon. For those unfamiliar with the history invoked here, read about the coon caricature. And those are all, I'm reading quotes here, okay? And for people who know the history, the words I just used went, "Oh, he did that." Yeah, he did that. So it is an exaggerated caricature of a black woman throwing a fit with a busted racket and a baby binky on the ground. Mm-hmm. But over where her opponent is talking to the referee, the umpire. The umpire saying, can you just let her win? But here's the thing. Ms. Osaka is of as dark a skin tone as Serena Williams. And this cartoonist has made her white and blonde.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's astonishing to see how easy it is to do this stuff.
Well, part of Serena's issue or questioning had to do with, wasn't it a judgment by the official?
Well,
on some point
it started,
of order?
Yeah, there's a rule against so-called coaching from the stands.
Mm-hmm.
And he warned her on that, and she objected to the warning, and then he punished her a point for it, and she continued to object. Then she broke her racket, and then she lost. Well, she lost the match.
Well, the reason I bring that up is the implication that some are making is that there was a if not racism, a sexist connection to the penalty giving, and having to do with those with a uterus would get the penalty, those without would not.
Right, because this kind of This kind of stuff has been routinely tolerated from male athletes. That's the whole point.
Well, that plus not just a week or two ago, there was a case where the female tennis player realized that her shirt was on backwards and she turned it right side round and got chastised or penalized. But that same day or at that same event, there was a male tennis player who was shirtless on the premises. So the sexist thing is not without merit. Like you say, there's a history of a double standard, a dual approach to these things. And then you add the outcry by some, or in this case, editorial cartoons, that add the racial animus. And that, you know, that's not right. That's there are bigger problems to worry about. Well, yeah, there may be other problems, but injustice or disparity in treatment is a problem of some magnitude in today's society.
Well, yeah, and the fact that it took no time at all for a racist cartoonist for an Australian paper owned by Rupert Murdoch to produce that grotesque image is in many ways worse than the underlying controversy.
Has Trump chimed in on this? Because that's the true test. If it's worthy of comment, what is his? Has he tweeted?
I haven't seen it. I don't know if he's a tennis fan.
Well, and see, we're in the same boat as far as appreciation or understanding of tennis. I can safely say, without fear of contradiction, that the only tennis match I've watched in its entirety was when Billie Jean King kicked Bobby Riggs' old white butt in, 74, 72, somewhere back there, in the Houston Astrodome. That was a proud moment for women and feminism and the forces of good and truth and justice in the American way.
Well, thank goodness we have social barometers out there to tell you, to tell us what the wrong approach is.
Now, wait a minute. These social barometers, do they include models that look like spaghetti?
No, they include boring old white men on Fox, just like this.
Oh.
Ice in your veins. I would have asked Serena, is your coach telling you ahead of time that this ump is notoriously tough, does fines and warnings like this, and has been inconsistent in the past? Have that knowledge in your head, and you're going to go in to win, and you're not going to be emotional on the court. It sets a bad example for women in sports, and it's not the way to win.
It was just a meltdown, a temper meltdown in the middle of
Things
the U.S. Open final.
Yeah.
That, there's no way that's going to be judged as a good thing.
I'm okay with your emotions, but it's when you get... We don't see that in the marks of champions like, say, I don't want to do this and bring up something else, but I've never seen Roger Federer do that.
Right.
And what comes to mind, Serena Williams is the best tennis player. I don't know who wrote this line, but somebody once said, there are no failures of talent, only failures of character.
Mm-hmm. Of course, this is a white guy, white mansplaining. But of course he's never seen Roger Federer do it, because Roger Federer doesn't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
That's why the problem is one of a double standard. But, they get a bunch of, Fox, they get a bunch of white people to sit around and complain about the black woman's conduct.
And that line rang true to me on Saturday.
Listen, is there sexism? Yes. Did this was he inconsistent in the past with male tennis players? Mm. Yes. Djokovic complained about that inconsistency with warnings in the past.
My heart goes out to the winner.
Yes.
The young lady, born in Japan, raised mostly in America, wins her first Grand Slam and bursts into tears.
To Jared's point.
That ain't good.
Yeah, no, that's
not.
And she was great.
Max Jared, as in.
That's all right. That's all right, Marty.
See you, sir. All right. I just... Yeah, that's four white men and one white woman.
Yeah, I detect the smarmy tones of Mr. Varney, Stuart yes. Varney, I believe his name is, referring to his heart going out. Well, first of all, for your heart to do anything, it must be present. You know, it must be present. And based on other pronouncements of his, I haven't seen much evidence of a heart going out or otherwise.
Oh, his heart's never gone out to a person of color in his life.
Yeah, have we heard from Tucker Carlson or did it happen before his Friday show?
No, Tucker Carlson went off on an anti-diversity rant.
Oh, God.
Something like, tell me when being different has ever been a good thing for a community. It's straight out of the neo-Nazi talking points book.
Yeah.
And I forget who it was that responded by saying, well, you know, the diversity in the Union Army came in pretty handy there toward the end when it was the overwhelming reason why the South lost.
Yeah, well, there's that, yeah.
But I hate that term, snowflakes, but it's unavoidable. I mean, we're talking about uptight, terrified, God knows why, white people. I mean, I get, you know what? I think the proof that white privilege is real lies in the fact that so many white people in this country are scared to death to lose it.
Well, and see, that dynamic is a given, in my estimation. But you've also got to look at another factoid in the mix. I don't know how many hours there are in a week. Okay, 24 in a day times 7, however many that is. Fox, so-called news channel, has to fill those hours. And part of the filling of those hours is to give the same basic right-wing talking point in a different way in each hour by different hosts and panels. Okay, so there's that. It could be part of the reasoning of dwelling on it and the phony outrage could be connected to the sense of fear or frustration on their part of how badly they may get trounced in 57 days in the midterms. And they can't talk about that, obviously. They can't talk about Trump's problems with the op-ed, okay, or with Bob Woodward's book coming out. So they've got to talk about something to fill that time. I mean, how many infomercials can you see, all right? So what do? It's the outrage du jour. And today, the wheel spawned and it happened to land on Serena. So they gear up their talking points machine because A, they've got to fill the time, and B, they've got to appeal, you know, to the red hat hood wearers. Am I close?
I think you're right on top of it.
All right, well, there you go.
Oh, and by the way, Julius Geezer has canceled, separate topic entirely, Julius Geezer has canceled a rally trip to Mississippi Stan because of Hurricane Florence. Did anyone tell him where Mississippi is?
Well, I don't think the spaghetti strands are headed that way, if that's what you're asking.
No, Mississippi is nowhere near the Atlantic seaboard. I mean, just not to put too fine a point on it, but, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, any child of 8 could look at a map and tell you that.
So
what's the real reason, I wonder?
Michael Glassner, Chief Operating Officer of Donald J. Trump for President, Inc., said in a statement, regrettably, we must cancel the planned Make America Great Again rally in Jackson, Mississippi this Friday. With Hurricane Florence on its way, we determined that this is the safest decision.
You popped out there.
They're maggots. This is the safest decision. Do they think that Air Force One won't be able to take off because of? Is this something to do with, you know, the D.C. area, Andrews Air Force Base?
Well, first of all, why is he having a rally in Mississippi? Are there any House races or Senate races?
Yes.
That are that close that his presence is required?
He needs to go and bask, okay?
But because the thing is, if there are close races in Mississippi, then the approaching hurricanes, the non-approaching hurricanes, are the least of the Republican Party's problem.
Well, there we go. It's competitive. I don't know if we would call it, you know, it's not Beto O'Rourke close, but it's more competitive than it should be.
And this is a governor's race in Mississippi?
No, a Senate race.
Or a Senate race in Mississippi?
Yes.
Damn, I may have to start going to church again. Christ, I can't remember the last time Mississippi had a Democratic governor. Does anybody know?
Well, I can tell you. Back before...
It's got to be the 70s.
Yeah, back when Mississippi was turning from Democrat to Republican.
Huh. Because I remember wasn't Ross Barnett the governor in the 60s or late 50s?
I remember the name, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but then again, you got to remember Democrats back then were like Republicans of today, only more toxic. You had to pick them up with tongs, you know? Ooh, I just gave myself the heebie-jeebies.
Oh, I'm
talking about Southern Democrats.
I know. Well, I'll tell you what.
No, I shuddered. I honest to God shuddered and went, ooh.
Think about using those frozen vegetables, because in something like a soup, they've got more crunch. They've got a little more life to them.
Yeah. I know corn and limas and a number of those veggies do come frozen.
And they've got mixed bags like green beans and lima beans and corn and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And
plus, Bob, it'll take me very close to the aisle. What's got the Haagen-Dazs coffee ice cream.
Diggity damn. By the way, stay away from In-N-Out Burger if you're tempted. The folks that own In-N-Out just gave a $25,000 donation to the California GOP. The maggots are going wild, running to In-N-Out Burger to own the libtards.
No, I don't go to In-N-Out because of those stupid Bible verses on the fries containers and the cups. I tried them once to see what all the fuss was when I first got to California. I wasn't much to write home about. Give me a Five Guys. Fuck, give me a frozen White Castle ahead of In-N-Out. And Carl's Jr., which is just around the corner here. Fuck Carl and his the bacon on his, and those stupid commercials. Of course, now where you are, they're probably Hardee's commercials.
They're Hardee's, yes.
Where the actor is. Sounds like he's on something. You know, give me a cheeseburger. Ask for the cheeseburger. Fuck you. And the burger. But anyway, I'll let you get going here, Bob.
Because I
don't want to get into any more trouble than I already have.
Well, you did get a note from Ron in Raleigh a little bit ago. He says, I still giggle. I remember when Scott said that when Haystacks died, he weighed 670 pounds and that he'd let himself go.
Pardon me.
Well, you'll have to send us. You'll have to send a food porn pic of the soup. It sounds fantastic.
Yeah, pardon me. I think what I'm going to do is get the goodies for it tonight, and then make it tomorrow, because we've got a string of coolish days and delightful nights for the next 3 or 4 or 5 days.
Mm, Maybe get a baguette to toast up and with the.
Oh yeah, well, I typically will get a loaf of sourdough. And I forgot to look for that. What is it? Gold miner's bread.
Yeah, gold miner sourdough.
Okay, let me put that on the list because I want to look for that too. I forgot to look last time. You told me what it was and everything, and I spiced it. All right, man.
All right, you have a good night, Scott. Take care.
I will. Take care, Bob.
Bye now. My buddy Scott calling from San Diego. So it's 10 minutes before the hour. Time to wrap up. We had $269 to raise this evening. Sadly, we still have $269 to raise. Makes for worrisome evenings. Nope, can't buy. It would be nice if we could take that down a little bit so it's not $469 on a Tuesday. But we'll see how it goes. So anybody wanting to help out, well, you know, the PayPal interface is over at headon.live. One last thing on the way out the door, because it's Moran Monday. Oh, by the way, Brother Deacon Asa says, the Doughy Fox anchors never said Serena Williams was hysterical on the court. See, they're not sexist. Progress. It seems fairly clear to me that she was subjected to a double standard, plain and simple. Because it's Moran Monday, passing bit of Moranity. I mentioned that Tucker Carlson was getting all upset about diversity. Well, remember, on the white wing, they coordinate their talking points. So over at NRA TV, Dana Lush is mad at, wait for it, Thomas the Tank Engine. I remember years ago when Jerry Falwell got mad at Tinky Winky. People have been, white wingers have been mad at SpongeBob. Well, Dana Lush over at NRA TV, and what Thomas the Tank Engine has to do with anything about guns, I don't know. But you might want to get the hockey puck for this.
So we saved the best for last, and I mean by best, it's worse, because everything is awful all of the time. This is horrible. This is Thomas the Tank, right? The long-running kids show about really weird anthropomorphic trains. Can they be if they're trains, though, or is that just animals? Anyway, they answer to this authoritarian maniac named Sir Topham Hatt, right? My youngest loved this show. I can't stand this show. It's creepy. Anyway, they've decided that the next stop is Virtue Town. Thomas the Tank is now bringing...
Wait. Isn't it bizarre that white wingers have turned the word virtue into something dirty? I remember when one of their heroes was writing books about virtue, but that was back when it was white Republican virtue, and he was arguing that if you wanted to cut down crime in America, the best way to go about it would be to abort more black babies. Bennett, remember? Sure. But virtue is a dirty word. Just, okay, so virtue is a dirty word, and so too is diversity.
Can't stand this show, it's creepy. Anyway, they've decided that the next stop is Virtue Town. Thomas the Tank is now bringing gender balance to the show by adding girl trains. Seriously, one of those trains, Nia, will be from Kenya to add ethnic diversity to the show. And which that, by the way, that's where it gets really strange to me, because I've looked at Thomas and Friends at their pictures and I see gray and blue. Am I to understand this entire time that Thomas and his trains were white? Because they all have gray faces. How do you bring ethnic diversity? I mean, they had to paint what I guess they thought was some sort of African pattern on the side of Nia's engine. I mean, how do you bring ethnic diversity to a show that literally has no ethnicities? Because they're trains. They don't even have skin pigmentation. Where was there some concern that the show had racist undertones?
How about there was concern that you provide, since the program teaches these little lessons about cooperation and getting along, how about that there was concern that that the trains have a sort of tie-in with all of the different kinds of human beings who watch the program? Dana Lush never had to grow up wondering why there were no Barbies that looked like her. Dana Lush was never presented with ideals of feminine beauty that were anything but consistent with what she hoped to be someday. But this is that fragility of white privilege. She throws a fit about an imaginary train character that happens to be a train from Kenya. You realize Kenya is one of those words that triggers these weird little freaks, right? Because Obama.
Because, I mean, Sir Topham Hatt clearly is white, but the trains? I mean, I'm looking at this picture, and I'm really, really struggling to understand how in the world there isn't any diversity in any of this. Oh.
And then they photoshopped Klan hoods on the front of some of the trains. And they make a Klan joke.
Struggling to understand how in the world there isn't any diversity in any of this. Oh, was it because I see it? It was the white hoods and the burning train tracks. Okay, fine, fair point, fair, I get it. Thomas the Tank Engine has been a blight on race relations for far too long. Clearly, this is overdue. Right?
Jesus, what a weirdo. Wow. When your weird, sick, Russian-influenced organization is so desperate for attention that it photoshops Klan hoods onto images from a children's TV program? Wow. That's weirder than praying the hurricane away. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Subject line, bullshit. Fox News can fuck off and they're wrong, wrong, wrong. Unlike you and Scott, tennis is one of my favorite sports. Federer has gone overboard on the court, repeatedly telling a linesman at one tournament, "Don't fucking talk to me," and he was not penalized. Then don't get me started about McEnroe and Connors, who were lauded for being the bad boys of tennis back in the day. Yeah, you can't be serious. Penultimate point, Serena was penalized for what her male white coach did. She had no control over his actions. But what else is new for women? Women are blamed, and men often are not. How about the disparity in treatment when it comes to prostitution rings? All the women and the madam are arrested and jailed, while the male customers are not. Case in point, Elliot Spitzer. Ultimate point, Serena Williams is the greatest tennis player to ever play the game, female or male. She's the only pro player to be able to consistently leave the tour for extended periods, return, and continue to dominate and win Grand Slams. She's attempting to do it again post-life-threatening pregnancy and at age 36. She almost did it. That's unheard of and unparalleled. I think Darlene has encapsulated the entire controversy in three short paragraphs. And, yeah, I'm always down with a fuck Fox News. Fox News can fuck off. But MSNBC wasn't much better. They had a panel of five on this morning, four of whom were white, and the only person who would defend Serena was the black guy. Somehow or another, whether it was Joe or Mike Lupica or Mika, they couldn't quite get to that place where they understood the intersection of racism and sexism. But Mika did talk about how women need to know their value. Jesus. So Moran, that's Moran Monday. And it has been rich with Moranity. Robert in Australia, Thomas the Tank Engine. The answer to who? Did they change the show for American audiences? The answer to the fat controller. The books were always about the silliness in the UK rail system. I remember all the fuss about there being no female engines, only female carriages, which encouraged girls to be followers, not leaders. So the producers had to introduce female engines. Crikey, it's a fun show for kids. I wish people would just leave it alone so the kids could enjoy it. No kidding. Truth that. I love the truth that sneaks, well, doesn't sneak, that finds its way into this program. And the last two notes are grand examples of both. So we'll be back tomorrow. I'll be back. I hope you will be too. For Titanic Tuesday. Thank you to all of you who keep the program going. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.